This is a recording for the Neil Trotwine teleconference with National Retail Federation, Thursday, June 28th, 2012, scheduled for 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Excuse me, everyone. We will now begin the National Retail Federation call regarding the recent Supreme Court decision on health care. Please be aware that each of your lines is in a listen-only mode. At the conclusion of the presentation, we will open the floor for questions. At that time, instructions will be given if you would like to ask a question. I would now like to turn the conference over to Neil Trotwine. Mr. Trotwine, you may begin.
Thank you, Chantel. This is Neil Trotwine with the National Retail Federation. We appreciate your time getting on this call in the midst of a very consequential day for healthcare and the future of our efforts. Before I get into any additional detail on the case whose outcome you likely know, the 5-4 decision upholding the Affordable Care Act, I'd like to introduce you to my boss here at the NRF, David French.
Thank you, Neil. I'm David French. I'm Senior Vice President of Government Relations here at the National Retail Federation. And I want to welcome everybody to the call. Due to the overwhelming response to the call, we streamlined the process over the last few minutes to try to get everybody into this call as quickly as possible. So a lot of people have gotten onto this call without passcodes and things like that. And I say that when you identify yourself, be aware that there's the possibility that this could be available to the general public. So be mindful of that. I wanted to just frame this issue just briefly. We're very disappointed at the NRF in the decision of the Supreme Court, but we're committed to working with the process to find a solution. We think one solution will be repeal of this law, and we're going to be working towards that goal. There are possibly other solutions that we can achieve through the regulatory process. The next 6 months are going to be a highly political environment for everybody, and I think both sides will find positive aspects in this decision and seek to leverage these aspects in their to their advantage during the political campaign. It might be easy to dismiss the political posturing over the law as just election year theatrics, but this may be one time where politics actually leads to a meaningful policy result, and it's going to be important for groups like the NRF to play a clear and an unambiguous role in the process going forward as we talk about it. And I'm really pleased. We have a lot of restaurant operators on the call. I'm pleased that Rob Green, Executive Director of National Council of Chain Restaurants, is here as well. Rob?
Thank you, David, and I just want to welcome everyone on the call from the NCCR community. We've appreciated the engagement and involvement of the National Council of Chain Restaurants members' companies, and we've been at the forefront working with the National Retail Federation throughout the legislative process that led to the law and throughout the process to where we are today to engage with all stakeholders to express the unique concerns of the chain restaurant industry and the unique challenges that the industry faces moving forward as this law goes into effect. So I want to thank everyone for their time today on the call and for their participation on behalf of their company.
Thank you, Rob, and I absolutely appreciate the energy and enthusiasm of the NCCR members. We're going to need all that energy and enthusiasm looking forward, because the Supreme Court left in place a law that is fundamentally anti-job. It's literally a tax on jobs, and remain determined to overhaul or hopefully repeal the law in the future. Now, as you've doubtless heard by now, it's been the equivalent of a firestorm in Washington. Supreme Court announced this morning in a 5-4 decision, Chief Justice Roberts writing for the court, that the Affordable Care Act, the ACA, survived challenges on the basis of the individual mandate. They curtailed the Medicaid expansion, essentially the coerced Medicaid expansion in the states, slightly. States will not have to participate at fear of losing their all their Medicaid money, and they got past the Anti-Injunction Act in fairly novel fashion. The decision was interesting on a number of different parts. I won't get too down into the weeds, but Chief Justice Roberts was thought to be leaning towards the conservative bloc. He wrote the majority opinion upholding the law. Justice Kennedy, who was thought to be leaning with the liberal bloc, actually wrote the dissent, which called for the complete repeal of, or a complete overturn of, the Affordable Care Act. So it just goes to show you've got to play the game, you've got to try the case to find the outcome. Our focus ahead, even though we're disappointed in this outcome, we never put all our eggs in the litigation basket. It was an important collision between the branches and high stakes, high drama. But ultimately, the hard work remains that we have started and will continue to help to change the path and hopefully move towards better and more affordable healthcare reform that supports jobs and doesn't tax jobs. Looking forward, many of our same efforts will, on the regulatory side, will need to continue. Legislative side, we're looking at a vote the week of July 9th in the House on a repeal motion. That'll pass the House. They'll get some Democratic support for it, too. At least double digits, I would guess. But ultimately, I take a lot of an odd comfort in some of the language of Chief Justice Roberts' opinion. It's what the lawyers call dicta, not critical to the holding, but interesting nevertheless. You know, and to paraphrase the Chief Justice, elections have consequences. If you don't like the policy outcome that Congress and the President gave you, change your representation. Regardless of your views on who's in Congress, it's important for the policy prescriptions and the laws you have to live with to rethink that effort. Looking forward, we are looking at, we've established a special website at www.retailmeansjobs.com/healthcare, and that will lead you to additional resources as we move forward on that two-track basis, both supporting efforts to get rid of the 30-hour definition for full-time employment, the employer mandate, health insurance tax, and other job and employer-unfriendly provisions. We'll also work very effectively on the regulatory side to try to smooth the rough edges of the law. Toward that end, we have the benefit of having on the call two of our eminent outside counsel, Stacy Rampe and Dean Rosen of the firm of Mailman, Vogel, and Castagnati. They are our counsel for the Essential Health Benefits Coalition, our effort to keep the benefits package affordable. Stacy and Dean, would you like to add anything to our previous comments?
I'll say, thank you, Neil. I'll say in terms of the essential health benefits, the coalition and the efforts there, with the Supreme Court ruling upholding the constitutionality of the law, the efforts by the coalition to ensure that the health benefits, the essential health benefits package is affordable and that it includes design flexibility or flexibility in benefit design are enhanced, frankly, our messages and our mission are enhanced today because as this law moves forward, we will have to make sure that we are talking to the administration and congressional leaders about the importance of affordability and design flexibility. So that we will continue to pursue that effort, and today's decision only amplified that. I don't know, Dean, if you have other...
Well, I think Neil summarized the findings well, and I think Stacy, you know, described the current climate. I think that we obviously can get into more depth on any of the interesting aspects of the decision and its implications, which I think we're all sorting through. But I think to maybe follow up on Stacy's point, I think there is going to be, I think far from being sort of settled, what we do know is that one of the really key barriers to the Affordable Care Act has been removed. As Neil said earlier, it may not have been the outcome that we were hoping for, but it is an outcome that we now have to deal with, at least until the elections. And what that means is that we've got to be engaged as the administration writes the rules, as the whatever states go forward to write their rules, to make sure that under the circumstances we achieve the best possible outcome. It may not be the outcome we prefer, but it would be better than if we were disengaged at this point. And so I would just underscore that, and then also maybe looking ahead a little bit to the future. While I think, again, this removes a major barrier, we are, as Neil referenced, going to have an election in November, and whatever the outcome of that election, where Republicans have promised to repeal the law, we are going to have a pretty significant national debate about the future of our entitlement programs. And that is no longer just Medicare and Medicaid, but that is the Affordable Care Act or the Obamacare as well. And I think as we look at the need for tax reform, the need for entitlement and budget and deficit reform, there will be opportunities to revisit and in the political and legislative context, relitigate the details of the Affordable Care Act, but I think it's critical, as Stacy said, that we stay engaged in all those forums.
I appreciate that, and thank you, Dean and Stacy, and we'll continue our work. A couple more points regarding the decision itself, and then I'll welcome the opening of questions. Fundamentally, the logic of this, of the Chief Justice's opinion is odd. The penalties, the individual mandate penalties, are not a tax for purpose of the Anti-Injunction Act, but they are pursuant to Congress's taxing powers. So they're, you know, I think if anything, it reaffirms our longstanding description as this being a tax on jobs. So while we will work in good faith with regulators on myriad issues to try to make this thing more easier to live with, we remain concerned about the effect on jobs and the ability to grow jobs in a struggling economy, and we will do our best to limit that impact. Chantel, if we may at this point, can we open up the line for questions?
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we would like to open up the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone now. Questions will be taken in the order in which they are received. If at any time you would like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, please press star 2. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone now. Our first question will come from Georgina Dominguez.
What can we do now to limit our exposure to this Health Care Act? In other words, if our employees work starting now 30 hours, will we not have to provide that?
It's a good question regarding the timing and the applicability of the penalties. That begins to apply in tax years starting in 2014 and is paid for the first time in 2015. In the meantime, if your combination of full-time and full-time equivalent employees is below 50, you might have to think hard about staying there. It's a bad thing for government to say that you better not grow over this level, or we're going to subject you to tax penalties. But that's one answer. Second answer would be to look at the structure of your benefits in advance of the 14 and try to limit that coverage in transition towards the exchange coverage. We're going to try to do our job and try to keep that package affordable, but at least in the short run on costs, focusing on ways to bring costs down.
Thank you very much. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone now. Our next question will come from...
Cynthia Radovich, Gap Inc.
Hi, Cynthia.
Hi, Neil. I don't really have so much a question. I just wanted to thank you for pulling together this call really quickly. I think you gave a nice, succinct summary at the beginning. There's a lot of moving parts here, and I think, you know, we will do our best to help support each other, you know, working through to a good solution with quality care in a responsible, sustainable way.
I really appreciate that, Cynthia. I made the analogy earlier today in another call. It's like tearing up a lottery ticket. You know, we would have loved to have gotten a different result from the Supreme Court. We didn't, and we need to proceed ahead with everything we've been doing, but really redouble our effort and recommit ourselves to action on all the different fronts, both on regulatory as well as on the congressional front, and trying to fix what we can fix and smooth what we can't fix. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question will come from...
Hi. My concern is that the 50 or more employee threshold. In our industry, half of the stores are mom-and-pops, quote-unquote. It feels unfair. It feels like a not level playing field. Is there any work or effort to include less than 50 employees?
Well, a couple of points, and it's been very frustrating for small business to get coverage for years. Coverage is too expensive. You guys will have the option, particularly the mom-and-pop stores, of tax credits now. They're a little complicated, but they're offered for first-time offers of health insurance. And you'll also be able to enter the exchange after 2014. So it's not that you are held out of the exchange, but above a certain size, you're subject to those tax penalties. So sometimes it's good to be small.
I'm not small, but I'm concerned about the small operators.
I appreciate the distinction. And there are issues, particularly for multiple franchise owners. And under the tax law, you have to aggregate your employees in different locations if you have common ownership, and that is an issue. Thank you for the clarification.
Thank you. Our next question will come from...
Chip Cundy. Hey, Neil, how are you?
Good, Chip. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Neil, a question for you and then maybe one for you and David. What's your sense now on the timing of the administration moving forward with a lot of the regulations that have been impending. I know we're coming up on some critical times to develop materials for our 2013, 2014 benefits year. So that's question one. And the second one is, there's been some talk because the Supreme Court used the taxing power to validate the individual mandate that a Republican-controlled Senate could, through budget reconciliation, repeal the law. And I'd appreciate your comments on that.
Absolutely. Taking them in reverse order, I think you could well see a Republican Senate use the reconciliation process, which provides for consideration with fewer than 60 votes, which is the typical hurdle in the Senate for action. David has described that as potentially the mother of all reconciliation bills, and I think there are a lot of issues that potentially could get caught up in that. In regard to the former question, we're hoping, and Stacy and Dean are joining us in agitating for resolution of a lot of these regulatory issues that we have various bulletins, guidances, advisories, but relatively little proposed and final regulation. We need that certainty in order to move forward. That's part of our work to keep the benefit package affordable. But the time is short, and the implementation dates are fast upon us. Not in the current Congress, but in the next Congress, in 2013, I think we can begin to have a discussion with Congress on pushing some of those deadlines back, particularly in the reconciliation context. That'll earn some money for the budget baseline and which can be put to other use. And it'll also give us some time and the regulators some time to get these provisions into operation before, instead of dealing with arbitrary deadlines, which are going to hamstring us.
And this is Dean. I just add, I think on the... just to underscore one thing on the reconciliation point, I agree with Neil. I think even without the court characterizing this as a tax, there are a lot of the subsidy provisions and other items that that could be repealed. The challenge is, I think the insurance reforms, a lot of the insurance reforms, probably including things like the definition of essential health benefits, may not be able to be repealed using reconciliation. So it would have to be parsed. Usually those things that have a budget or a tax impact, as your question implied. But again, that would presume the outcome of the election and would only happen if there was a Republican sweep. But I think if there was a Republican sweep, I have little doubt that they would try to use reconciliation to repeal as much as they could.
Dean, this is David. Just to remind everyone, they use reconciliation to get it into law, and certainly they would feel very justified in taking the reconciliation hatchet to it. So.
This is Stacey. That's true. What you could see if we had a Republican-controlled Senate that pursued budget reconciliation, though Democrats would certainly criticize that effort roundly, quoting Republicans back to them who have criticized Leader Reid for using budget reconciliation on a number of issues. So it is not without some political fallout.
Hypocrisy is sometimes rampant here, isn't it?
And bipartisan.
Yes, and bipartisan. Good point.
Chantel, do we have any additional questions?
Yes, sir. Our next question will come from
Robert Roan, QSC Restaurants, franchisee Wendy's. Good afternoon. I wanted to know, in that provision, is there a federal real estate tax that no one knows about on the selling of our real estate homes or anything?
There is a tax on unearned income, and they're getting at some of that built-up income, particularly on the Medicare payroll tax increase, and it got relatively short attention during the debates, but there is that tax on unearned income. Stacey or Dean, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I'm sorry.
Robert, I think that's the best we have out there, but it's literally a $1 trillion bill, and it was they literally rated the larder of all the pay-for issues out there, and I think this is one of those that got added into the process. Thank you for bringing that up.
A quick question. Do you know what percent that is going to be?
I don't recall offhand, but I'll be glad to respond to you if you want to email me, and we'll reinvestigate that.
Yeah, because this issue is something that a lot of people don't know that there's going to be a federal tax on real estate every time you sell a home. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question will come from
Nancy Thomas, Retail Merchants Association, Richmond, Virginia. Hi, good afternoon, Neil.
Hi, Nancy.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Great. First of all, I want to ditto Cynthia's thanks just on behalf of all retailers and all businesses. Thank you to you, Neil, David, and Stacy for supporting us. It gives us great comfort to know and hear what you all have to say. My question is, several times about smoothing over certain regulations as we're moving forward. Could you tell us what would be the top two or three that you think are the most important at this juncture to smooth over?
Absolutely. And I promise not to get too far down in the weeds, which is tough on regulatory issues. Retailers and retail jobs, you know, whether it's a retail store or a franchise restaurant, we have strange work schedules. We have a lot of turnover. We have people whose jobs fluctuate over time. And defining this new definition, which is a very difficult definition to define full-time, is 30 hours or more upon week. You don't want to have people coming in and out of coverage, whether they're in our workforce or whether they're in the exchange. So we've found common ground with Treasury Department, primarily working on this, to develop an idea that you can average over time your hours to see if somebody graduates to full-time status and then goes into coverage. Another area, obviously the essential health benefits package that I'm working with Stacy and Dean on is another example. Third example has to do with the unaffordable penalty. You're penalized if it exceeds 9.5% of family income. But how are you as a business going to know what other sources of an income your employee has? So we've tentatively worked out a safe harbor to where we can base that on W-2 wages, which is something we do know. So those are the kind of issues that we're working on to try to make this more employer-friendly. Another big area is the enormous amount of information that your government is going to look for from a number of different agencies. So we're continuing to work on making them ask once, not 50 different times, and trying to work on that path. Hope that helps, Nancy.
Yeah, thank you. That does.
Thank you. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone now. Thank you. Our next question will come from
Margaret Ballard, Virginia Retail Federation.
Hi, Margaret.
Hi, Neil. Thanks so much for holding the call. I just want to make sure we're clear. We do have several businesses under 50 employees that there is not a penalty on those businesses if their employees join the health care exchange?
There's nothing about the Affordable Care Act that's not complicated.
Okay.
In this case, you've got your full-time employees, and then if you have part-time employees, you aggregate them through a formula. If you look at our calculator at retailmeansjobs.com/healthcare, it'll do all the math for you. But you can have fewer than 50 full-time employees and get pushed over the 50 line by your part-time employee hours. So again, this law is complicated and nothing most businesses want to have to deal with. And we're trying to make the best of it we can. But check out that mandate cost calculator if you get a chance.
Thank you. Again, to ask a question, you may press star 1 on your touch-tone phone now. Well, sir, at this time, it looks like we have no further questions in the queue.
Well, if I can close up, I really appreciate your time in getting on this call. The Supreme Court decision today is a significant event, but it is a point in time. And if anything, this should be the signal for us to redouble our commitment to efforts to change or repeal the Affordable Care Act, and particularly to make sure the Affordable Care Act is in fact affordable. I'm told that this teleconference will be archived and the content will be available later today on our website, so you'll get a chance to come back to it or share the content with some of your friends who perhaps couldn't make this call. But again, I appreciate your time and effort, and I look forward to working with you my friend Rob from NCCR in the future. Thank you again, Chantel. I think that does it for us.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, this conference has now concluded. You may disconnect your phone lines and have a great rest of the week. Thank you.